Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa, who wants to know, where would you like to be? Whether you're a super fan getting ready for a game or a food truck owner feeding hungry fans, Visa wants to help you pursue your passion with a simple and unwavering vision to be the best way to pay and be paid for everyone everywhere. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise, and they want to provide you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. That's why they're continuing to make innovations, from tapping to pay to pushing money directly to your debit card so you can get to where you would like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in New York, where reportedly the Giants have hired Patriots special teams coordinator and wide receivers coach Joe Judge as their next head coach. Judge has been with the Patriots since 2012, running their special teams unit since 2015, and ESPN's Ed Werder is reporting that the Giants have requested permission to interview Jason Garrett for their offensive coordinator job. All right, let's get to it.
Yeah.
Do we like this hire? Joe Judge, not
Who?
Judge Joe Brown.
Who?
Joe Judge as the Giants head coach.
JJ, hey. respect to Joe Judge, who I didn't like until I entered his name into Google and went deeper than just what the bio would suggest in terms of being a wide receiver special teams coach. And I started to put it all together, and I actually like the hire. One, it's out the box. Let's respect that. So it's not just a traditional tread. Two, as a special teams coach, you get in front of the entire team. Offensive coordinators don't. Defensive coordinators don't. And a special teams coach knows that his key to success is to motivate that room, because that room doesn't want to be there. No one ever raises their hand after draft day and say, man, I can't wait to play special teams. You hate it, but you find that that's a way to your success. And for some guys, that's their livelihood. So when you have a young coach, 38, who gets in front of the room and has the vote of confidence from the Don himself, Bill Belichick, said, this guy's next. Mm-hmm. You know what? After the top layer of who and what, I actually respect and admire them for going out the box and hiring Joe Judge.
I agree with you. I was there with him for a hot few months. You know, he's a guy that everyone, you know, he was well-respected. They looked up to him. You know, he was a guy that, like you said, he was at the head of the helm for all the special teams that they had going on. The only issue that I would have with it is that I probably would have wanted to see somebody with a little bit more experience at head coaching than just being the helm of, you know, that unit. Other than that, I don't have too much of an issue with it.
I like the hire. When you look at the history of what's going on, and we go to Baltimore, who's probably arguably the hottest team in the National Football League right now, guy by the name by John Harbaugh, who was the head coach there, yeah, was the special teams guy in Philadelphia, mm-hmm, for Andy Reid. Andy Reid saw the competency, he saw the innovation of what he brought to the table, and I think in a day and age where things may be getting a tad bit stale, and then we'll continue on the conversation of coaches, but in this day and age, you have to have somebody who's innovative, can capture the imagination of his players, and bring some excitement to the team. So regardless of us knowing him or him being a big-name prospect, I think it's a solid hire.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that I landed there as well, because I had the initial reaction like that. Who the hell is this?
Right.
When I saw Patriots coach Giants, I assumed it was Josh McDaniels. And then I'm like, well, hold on. I haven't heard of Joe Judge. I haven't heard anything about him. But I did think about Andy Reid when he had John Harbaugh, elevated John Harbaugh to DB's coach to enhance his chances of becoming a head coach in the NFL. It was a one-year deal, the same thing as Bill Belichick just did for this guy, elevating the wide receivers coach to enhance his ability become a head coach. That's Andy Reid signing off on John Harbaugh. This is Bill Belichick signing off on Joe Judge. It's and Marcellus, I think the point that you make in terms of the special teams coach addresses the entire team and then motivates unwilling participants to do what the Patriots special teams did this year. They carried this team. Everybody, and all respect to Peter King, who I respect a lot, but everybody's talking about, oh, I can't believe they didn't interview Josh McDaniels. Well, hold on. Josh McDaniels' unit was a problem for the Patriots this year.
Right.
Joe Judge's unit was a strength for the Patriots this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of coverage and in terms of blocking punts and just creating field position, his unit was an asset for the Patriots. So, and to me, I'm like, well, Josh McDaniels has already failed once. He turned down the Colts. Why would anybody be in hot pursuit of him so much? So I don't have a problem with this Judge Joe.
I see you respect to that brother. Look, and Josh McDaniels failed with flying colors as well because a lot of players were upset with him as their head coach and how he ran that organization. Being a motivator of men, being a special teams coach, he's studying for his PhD in education. Go get it, Joe. So when you get into that room, I want to talk a little bit more about that room because I was in that room. You were in that room,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. That was my only way.
Yeah, your only way, right?
No, I was in that room. Come on.
Yeah,
come
on. But we were in that room.
That's different.
You were different than me.
We was in that room to make it.
Right,
you
right.
was in that room just because they said, hey, just look at this.
Yeah, let's humble LeVar for a second. So here you go. You're in that room. And no one fully wants to be in that room unless they know that's their only way. And a special teams coach will walk up to you and say, look, man, I need 100% every single play. You're like, I don't make my money off of special teams. No one does in this league. And I remember our coach used to say, I need you to go 100% because I can't even guarantee you'll make a play if you do go 100. But if you don't, I will guarantee you won't make a play. Mm. And that's the mindset and that's the leadership that comes out of this. You also focus in on the hitting yardage. You hit on it. They were number one in terms of average starting field position, opponent starting position. This is a unit that was leading the pack. And he had to focus in on those little details to motivate those men.
Let me Let me add this. Sometimes the biggest heartbeat, the strongest heartbeat of a team is a special teams player. It was Slater in New England.
Yeah, yeah.
When I came into the league, Eric Metcalf and Deion Sanders were the guys who pushed the importance of what special teams was. So to me, when you're looking at the influence that these type of coaches have and the influence that it can have on the players and what that can represent in the locker room, I think it's it has a great opportunity to have a ton of success and possibly see what happened in Baltimore.
The other thing I think the Giants may be, there's a narrative, maybe trying to ride this wave. There's a narrative on Belichick assistants that they don't work out.
They don't work, yeah.
But we've got Bill O'Brien right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Vrabel, not an assistant, but he's off the Patriots tree.
Mm-hmm.
Having success, Brian Flores, I think most people think he did an awesome job in Miami.
And he beat them.
And so, to me, I would never give up on Belichick assistants. I wouldn't. You want to pick from the tree of success, and I know that maybe some of these guys have been riding Bill Belichick's coattails, but I just don't know who's been doing it better, who's been creating a better culture than the Patriots, and I just don't have a problem with organizations that keep picking from that tree.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
James Harrison and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Panthers, who have reportedly filled their head coaching vacancy, hiring Baylor coach Matt Rhule to take over Ron Rivera's old job. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports that Rhule has signed a 7-year deal worth $62 million.
Go ahead, Matt.
That can go even higher with incentives. Mm. The hire raises a lot of questions about what the future may hold for Cam Newton. And that's where our question is this a good hire for Cam Newton?
No. Because all this hire says is Cam is gone. Gone. Money talks. 760? Coach, who? What's his name again?
Matt Rhule.
I mean, I'm not disrespecting the man or what he's done, but have you done this at this level to get this? So money talks to Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, who we heard reportedly, was a great asking price for one Cam Newton and his services if you want them. You don't dangle Cam Newton out there unless you're thinking about trading him. Now you sign a coach who has a 7-year deal. Think about this in terms of calendar. Do you want Cam Newton at 31 in a 7-year deal and then he retires or falls off around year four, year five? That's the prove it time for a coach in a 7-year deal. So he doesn't want to go to free agency or a rookie in the draft around year four, year five. It doesn't add up. So you don't give a coach this type of runway and say start with someone old. An old plane with that much runway. He's going to start fresh and new because he knows he has that time and he's going to draft or he's going to try and groom.
I agree with you, but let's be clear. Like John Gruden got 10 years and stuck with Derek Carr for these first
years. Yeah, but not the same vehicle we're talking about. Derek Carr is younger. Derek Carr doesn't have the same style of play.
Yep.
And they have a big move that we'll see if Derek Carr joins.
I don't like it. I don't understand it. To be honest with you, it don't make no sense. He's got 7 years, $60 million, and he's done what at the pro level? His college, what is the, he did 11-3 at Baylor last year. I think he's 47-43 over his last 7 years as a head coach in college. Mm. He gets a 7-year deal. So this is the blackest show around, right? That's what it's supposed to be. So let's go to this right here, right now.
Fearless
and blackest show around. I'm going to give you that, okay? That's what I'm going to right now. So
Lord,
let's go back to 2003. They implemented something by the great Dan Rooney called the Rooney Rule, right? Mm. That gives minorities a chance to get these positions, okay? Mm. And in 2001, 2002, you had three head coaches at that time, and I believe it was Tony Dungy of minorities, Herm Edwards and Dennis Green. Fast forward 17 years from now, and we're in the same position with three minority coaches and Mike Tomlin, we got Lynn and Brian Flores, okay? What has the Rooney Rule did, but give somebody who is not qualified a 7-year, $60 million deal that has not done anything at this level? If Dan Rooney was alive today, he'd be pissed. To see what it has done. So now it's just come down to it. Let's check the box. We got a minority to get an interview. We check the box and let's move on. I don't understand this. I don't like this. And this dude actually had the nerve from what they say to call the Giants and say, hey, y'all want to match this? The Giants said, you know what? Hey, we go get crazy, but we ain't going to get that crazy. So this is not a good move for Cam, and I don't understand the move at all.
I'm biased, and I totally look at what James said, and some of it I respect. I respect the Rooney Rule, of course. I'll disagree a little bit on what you were saying, and the reason why I'll say, yes, it's a good deal.
Let's enter into the record, though. You played with Matt Rhule.
Yes. I'm a tad bit biased.
I know, but let's
explain the bias. With him.
He was a senior linebacker.
Smartest football player
I had been around at that time, respect. Him and Aaron Collins.
Yeah, I love that.
And had a great experience with him and have been friends with him, remained friends very close for a lot of years until present day. So he's like a brother to me. Mm. But this isn't about Matt Rhule. The question is, do you think that Matt Rhule hire is good for Cam? So we could attack Matt Rhule all you want. But the reality here is that Cam Newton has to make this work. This is Cam's last possible opportunity to be considered a legit franchise quarterback. So it has to work. It had better work for him. If we're talking about, and here's where I say I disagree, if you're talking about getting to the prove it moment in year four of your coaching contract in your career, because they gave him such a long deal with such high numbers, I think number one, year one, is the most important year for him. And that year one being him setting the tone for what this franchise is going to look like, what the identity is it going to be coming from him. And if Cam can buy into that and support that, it really could make it a possible saving grace for his career.
That's what I'm more focused on. I can't buy into anything he says because he hasn't done anything at this level that makes me want to believe that what he's saying is true.
Jimmy Johnson was in the same spot.
I understand. How many people, how many coaches can you name on one hand? You can't even fill your hand up that came straight from college and went to the pros and were successful.
Here's the only problem. Here's the problem with your reasoning. The problem is like I said, in that year one, you have an opportunity to build the identity of your team as the head coach of that team. This is the pros. So if you come into that room as James Harrison and could be possible future Hall of Famer at that point, all pro, they just gave that man $60 million, Debo. So if you come into that meeting room, I can recall when Marty came in and Bruce Smith and Daryl Green and those guys did not like Marty Schottenheimer's coaching style. But you know what Marty did? He pushed through it. And both those guys were not on the team the following year. And to me, it comes down to a coach has to be able to overcome if a player is a vet that doesn't like it or doesn't think that you're proven. A coach has to overcome if there's a franchise quarterback that may be too old or may be too beat up. That coach is being paid $60 million for what? To come in and figure out what they need to do for that team. And I think that's what he's been called to do.
Listen, James, we're going to get to the Rooney part of this probably tomorrow. We're going to take a beat, think about today, want to talk about whether it's good or bad for Cam Newton. There certainly is a discussion to be had about what's going on with the Rooney Rule. But today, I came into the conversation thinking this was bad for Cam, but the more I think about it, I think he got a long-term deal and that kind of money, and it gives him the freedom to really evaluate Cam and do whatever he wants to do. Maybe he wants to come in, he's got his mind made up, let's get rid of Cam. But I don't think there's any risk for him to, hey, let me go a season with Cam Newton, an extremely talented guy at some point in his career, a former MVP, a guy that has carried a franchise before. Let me take this year and try to figure out if there's something there. And if I have to discard
so you
him.
You think he takes that year to do that? Or
yes.
Does he come in and say, I got 7 years. I'm going to make this team
Thank
mine
you.
Without the guys that were here before me. I'm going to make this my team. I'm going to get rid of anybody that is not going to give me the credit that I deserve for making this team what it's going to be.
I don't think with that kind of leeway and that kind of backing, I don't think you discard any asset. Potential asset. That's just an ego thing you're talking about. The smart thing to do with the kind of leeway is like, hey man, Cam Newton was the number one overall pick, and when healthy, we've seen signs of him being a very productive player.
Yeah.
Why not try to see what's there? And that's what I think he'll do. And then you can move on from him next year.
When you're trying to redefine culture, or when you're trying to really look at your roster to restore it, you set someone up for failure when you grab an unproven coach and give them that much runway because it doesn't create urgency. So now you can say there's a new coach and I have to work for him, but that has a limit. What gives you real motivation is a coach who's sitting there saying, I got 3-4 year contract. That's where I got 1-2 years to make this work. When you have a 7-year contract, you can go out there and do what you want to do to the tune of what John Gruden did in his first year. 4-12, and everyone's like, what is going on? And then this year, they responded. But what we're saying for Cam Newton is he can't just have a mulligan year. This year is the urgent year for Cam Newton in terms of what's going to happen. And good for Cam
good.
Newton. And bad when the coach comes in who's not on that same calendar and schedule.
It's good for the coach as well.
You understand that?
I do understand what you're saying, but I still think it's good for the coach as well. The sense of urgency is because Cam has not been able to prove what type of player he is today, right now.
Nah, that's not fair.
That
Cam,
is fair.
Cam has
that's
to run right now in this moment,
he's not on
and
the
Coach
field.
Gets to jog.
But he's not.
That's the problem. Look, Coach, you are not as motivated as me to get this done immediately because you
see,
are
going
to.
I understand what.
Because of the contract.
But
term.
You still got to look at it from the coach's perspective. He is coming in unproven. He has a sense of urgency to prove himself.
Not with a 7 year.
Not with a 7 year.
Get sure
out of
here.
Is.
Oh, stop sure it, he
man.
Is.
You got that
guaranteed $60 million.
Guaranteed.
I'm going to figure
it's
this
not
out
our 60.
As I go if I need to.
Thank you.
That's no, what he's supposed
hold
to do.
Second. Hold for 1 second, though. You're honest to goodness, do we really believe coaches think that way?
Oh, yeah.
That it needs to be my team. I need to do it my way.
No. They're like, oh, I got time here. There's no urgency for me to win.
There's a sense of urgency.
It's a sense of urgency, but I have time. I don't need to do anything drastic because I have 7 years to build.
That actually puts you in a good position to make sound decisions.
When
you have time. But Matt Rhule's not going to come in here.
But he's got to fit.
Matt Rhule's not coming in here thinking like, hey, man, I've made it. I got $60 million in the tank. It doesn't matter what happens here.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter what happens, but the fact of the matter is, I do have 7 years.
Right.
Do you think do you think Gruden would have did what he did over there if he didn't have 10 years?
Thank you.
You haven't seen
you think he would have gotten
seen a coach get prematurely fired. I've seen it happen a whole bunch of times.
But you're still getting that 60.
They're still going
to
get paid.
If you go to the batter's box and they say, oh, unlimited strikes.
You're not going to try and tear it up.
You got unlimited strikes.
You
can swing it whatever you want to. You can let some go by. You can do whatever you want.
So his reputation means nothing to him.
I think he's not on par with the average coach and accomplished coaches. No one is walking around here saying I got 7 years already banked up except John Gruden. And that's unfair for a guy who's going to come in and now have to deal with an urgent matter. That's unfair
to
that player.
Well, why can't that speak to the value of him as a coach?
Oh, I'm not talking about him as a coach. I said they set him up.
And if that speaks to the value of him as a coach, then why can't he take the time to build the team the right way?
Well, that's a different conversation because I think that Tepper, the new owner, has overvalued his value. Given a guy from college, 7 years, $60 million.
Come on.
That's a mistake.
One else has that.
I don't think that's... There's nothing wrong with that.
They gave him the
you
contract.
You are blinded by him being your...
That's
I
your
am
boy.
Not blinded
yes, you
by
are.
It.
You
know, I'm
put his horse blinders on. It rings in his mouth and leave him around.
Let me put him on.
LeVar, I wouldn't give any coach
thank
7 years,
$60 million.
Okay. No
player.
I wouldn't even do it for Belichick.
So there's a value there that ownership group sees.
No, it's not. What does he see?
His first year
is
David Tepper. You know what David Tepper is?
There is. He's a very wealthy man.
He's the richest owner in the NFL.
That's it.
All that means is I got so much
money here.
I want to go through the due diligence.
So they're not going.
And then the same guy he tried to hire called up. He boo talking the Giants. Yeah, hey, right. Dog, you want to match this?
No.
If I walked in that locker room as a Panther, and I knew you wanted to be in New York before here,
that,
I'm on your head, coach.
I threw my hat in the ring.
Y'all need to stop. You wasn't getting that job.
You right.
Need to stop that.
You right about that. Sure enough, wasn't
you
getting. Yeah.
Whitlock and Wiley, James Harrison is back. We're joining us now is Fox Sports college football analyst and Super Bowl champion Reggie Bush. All right, let's move to the Seahawks, who just escaped Philadelphia with a win and now head to Green Bay for a divisional round showdown with the Packers. After a lot of hype around Marshawn Lynch's return, the running back didn't do much against the Eagles, rushing for just 7 yards on 6 carries, including a short touchdown run. Even still, Pete Carroll says he's excited by what Beast Mode has done and wants to increase Lynch's role in this week's game against Green Bay. All right, do we think Pete Carroll's plan, more Marshawn, we think that's going to work?
I think it will work. I think that's the only way you can make this work. I see juice in his legs for what Marshawn Lynch is in this term of where he is in his career. I know only 7 yards. We saw a couple
six
catches.
Carries. But I mean, it was 1.2 yards per carry.
You and I both could do that.
Touchdown,
we
though.
Get it.
Got a touchdown.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. And a touchdown again. I'm going to take everyone back to a defensive meeting room, football 101. The AAA, alignment, assignment, action. And people don't understand that principle. It's basically if you put someone by their alignment, it to a defender who is studied up, can start to predict assignment. Mm-hmm. And then you just got to go out there and act on it. What you're doing that's hindering Marshawn Lynch is putting them in the game in alignments and in limited roles where D defenses are teeing off on them. They know exactly what's coming. Mm-hmm. You have to open it up. Because when you limit their alignment, you'll limit their assignments. Yeah. Once you limit their assignments, you limit their actions. As a defense right now, they're seeing Marshawn Lynch come in and they're like, only three things are going to happen, yeah, man. It's too simple. So open up the playbook for Marshawn Lynch. He certainly has the aptitude to take it in and digest it and let him go out there and express himself full action.
I think it'll work, too. You definitely have to give him more reps. Rather, he's getting the ball or not getting the ball, he needs to be in there at times where he's not getting the ball. And I've been retired and unretired and came back, and, you know, it's a timing thing. You have to get back used to that muscle memory of taking hits, giving hits, mm-hmm, and being able to come back and play the next week or practice the next day.
Playoffs are like training camp for
Listen,
right now.
How tough right is now, hard, I'm trying to tell you, it's the worst thing I ever went through. I was literally, if it wasn't for the fact that I was a man plan. Of, yes, very
try to get plan. This guy in shape during the playoffs.
You gotta figure out, how to work him in to be able to get 15 or 20 carries and touches through the process. No, it's called being retired and coming back in after you've retired. Like, it's not the same thing. I don't care how much
you want anything out of them.
They call it August.
Listen, I don't care what you want to say. It's going to work.
Do you believe that?
Oh, no question.
All right, he sounds like he's talking you out of it.
Our bet was 40 yards in the first game. Has he reached 40 yards yet in two
combined
games?
Combined, right?
How many carries he get?
Don't do that.
About 30.
He got 41 yards in two games. Now what? Now what?
Lynch mob. Beast mode. Listen,
now what?
I trust Pete Carroll, the head coach, man. This guy has been ultra successful at every level. I trust him with the run game, especially with Beast Mode bringing him back. I do, as a running back, I know how important it is to get more touches so you can get a feel for the game. It's very hard to get six carries and to go out there and try to be productive, especially if those carries are spread out. So Pete Carroll has done just about
six and seven,
right? Everything right, except give Beast Mode the ball on fourth.
Have you ever had a six carry game with 7 yards, yeah, Reggie?
I've had no, six carry game, which was not great.
You got more than 7 yards.
I mean, I didn't retire and then unretired and come back.
I know.
I'm ready.
And that's why this ain't going to work.
It's going to work.
They need to be talking. There's a guy on their roster they're paying $35 million a year. Mm. The quarterback.
Yeah.
That's their salvation.
You want them to run him?
I want to do whatever is necessary.
You want
to
run him and get him bopped.
Get him bopped.
Bop. Carson Wentz.
Whatever it takes.
Did you see half the hits that he took on that one touchdown drive? That would have put your $35 million on the sideline.
I'm not talking about running. I'm talking about letting him throw. He's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. He's probably the second or third best quarterback this year. Mm-hmm. They should be leaning into Russell Wilson rather than leaning into some miracle that they hope happens, that some guy that's been sitting around on his ass for 18 months is somehow going to save him in playoff time.
We ain't saying he had to save him. He just got to help him.
Yeah.
As long as he give him the ball on fourth and goal, I'm okay. On short and fourth and one,
he got stuffed on one fourth and one.
But he got a touchdown, though.
Hey, look, they got
he got in the zone, though.
He ain't fumble or throw a pick.
Right, and it's not just what Reggie's talking about.
To end the game.
Like getting this rhythm. That's like simple. Yeah, we got to give him touches for rhythm. You also got to get him in different spots, different opportunities so that he can do more for this offense.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson throwing the ball 70 times in the two games with Marshawn Lynch, okay? It's a little uptick there. Here's the thing. You're going against defense in Green Bay that is 23rd against the run. You got opportunities right there. You can't just line up in the near set or far set and say, Marshawn, dive. Yeah. We get that.
We know,
that's coming, man. So you got to do other things. And Reggie, I look at your record in Buffalo.
They going to put the
big one. Reggie, you had a 6-carry, 5-yard game.
Let me tell you
what he say? 6-carry, 5-yard.
Let me explain myself. Let me explain.
That's 6-carry, 7 yards.
Reggie,
I was in Buffalo, all right? That's the first issue, okay?
He unretired. He's just unretired. You were still, you did training camp.
Right, you did this.
You wasn't sitting at home.
Reggie Bush.
Seriously, this whole Marshawn Lynch deal is like a miracle that y'all are hoping it happens. And I just don't think they need to pray for a miracle. They got Russell Wilson. They should be trying to win this game offensively through Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Hollister, who I can't remember his first name, the tight end, but they—that's who the and whoever Homer, the running back that actually wasn't retired for 18 months. This whole Marshawn Lynch deal is like a little miracle. It's a little commercial or marketing tool that everybody's bought into. And, oh, Marshawn Lynch is going to sprinkle magic dust, magic Skittles all over the field.
And he left some Skittles on the field and the other day.
That's a miracle that's not going to happen.
So he's going to have no bearing, no success on
this.
It's
been two straight games if that's been the case.
Did they win?
Well, listen, the game plan that they need to stick to go up to Green Bay to win, they have to run that football and run it well.
They have to, that, man. Do you remember latter season Russell Wilson? Not exactly the best performances. You got to talk about that they need that balance, especially the injuries to all the starters. Russell Wilson in the latter part of the season, outside of the Carolina game, you could go Philly. That's it. And the Philly was the playoffs. Everything else is low standard Russell Wilson.
Okay, but if you went to Vegas and had to bet on who could have a superstar-type game or who could have a breakout performance in this playoff game, Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch? Mm. Everybody's betting on Russell Wilson.
Everyone is.
Russell Wilson is paid to carry this team. He's capable of carrying this team. They should let this man go out there and die on his sword and run this offense through Russell Wilson. And look, if you Homer or these other guys, but sitting out here banking on Marshawn Lynch, this is a joke.
Now,
this is what sports fans do. I get them throwing
banking
the Skittles.
Banking is not the same as
banking
expanding.
Is not right.
He said expanding his role, giving him more opportunities. Yeah, give him more, but that's not banking.
Okay.
Russell Wilson still
he didn't
leader.
Say we're going to go out here and we're going to get Marshawn Lynch the ball 40 times. He needs to get 40 carries or we ain't going to win.
The man just had 6 carries for 7 yards. And we want to expand his role?
Yeah. 6 carries for 7 yards. Yeah. And a touchdown that was a pivotal 6 points that they needed to win the game.
Yeah. You do need
now
to expand
what?
His role so he can do more.
Now what? We need more.
Much is given, much is expected.
12 carries for 13 yards. Is that what you're looking for?
Reggie, you had that too.
it was 6 carries for 5 yards.
Stop, looking up my stats right now, all right? I know the last year Buffalo was a struggle, man. I know that.
Reggie Bush and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Lamar Jackson, who's celebrating his 23rd birthday today, Capricorn season, and got a pretty nice present, being voted first team All-Pro after his MVP caliber season. But Lamar wasn't a unanimous choice, with 3 people voting Russell Wilson, including Hall of Fame GM Bill Polian. Of course, we all remember Polian said Lamar should switch to wide receiver before he got drafted. I want to ask you guys, do you have an issue with Polian not voting for Lamar?
Yeah, I do. Okay. And I was someone that defended Polian when he said, hey, I think the guy should switch to wide receiver. I didn't have a problem with that. But Lamar Jackson's been the best player in football this year.
Yep.
I don't think it's even up for debate. So I don't get it. But yeah. I do. I get it somewhat, but I don't like it.
I don't get it. In any form or fashion. So I do have an issue with it. And I have 3 things to comment on to support why I have an issue with it. One, just voting in general. Usually we vote for something, for someone to attain something. It's aspirational. Not these votes. It's actually a record. We already saw it. Mm-hmm. And we're just voting on what we saw. So how can you mess that up? It's not so much, I think you can become. It's what you actually were. So that's one. Two, he lapped the field. Like, Russell Wilson included, he lapped the field. I mean, we're talking about a historical campaign here. So, once again, Bill Polian, who I truly respect, what are you looking at? And then the last thing, I think I know what he's looking at.
I don't know.
Those implicit biases that we all like what we like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for you go into anyone's world and just start looking at, okay, you know what? I like me a pure pocket conventional passer.
Yes, he do.
And no matter what comes, I don't care what color it is, I know what I like. I like a guy like this. And if I can't find that, I'm going to find the closest version, Russell Wilson. So for everyone who's thinking a race card, he did pick Russell Wilson. So it's not like he went there and said Aaron Rodgers or someone else. So I just think that he's just stuck in his ways, and he's trying to find any version that's close to that that is still playing at an exceptional level. Russell Wilson's great, but Lamar, next level.
Yeah, I think I don't have an issue with it because he has the right to his opinion. He's obviously earned that being someone who votes for them. At first I did wonder, was there a racial undertone to why he is not giving Lamar his propers? And again, like you mentioned, he did pick Russell Wilson, but I also do believe that you're right in saying that that is the lesser of his two evils to choose from. Who else is he going to choose that would have any type of legitimacy to maybe shield him from the criticisms that are going to be levied his way after making that decision not to make him the All-Pro selection? So I think it clearly establishes that he does have a bias against Lamar Jackson for whatever reason. If it's a pocket, you're not a pocket passing quarterback. Mm-hmm. If you're not the quarterback that I would have wanted you to be, if you were a quarterback, whatever it is, he does have a bias, and I think that that's evident. But I don't have an issue with him having his own opinion.
It sounds like he's doubling down on his hate for Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying he hates Lamar
Jackson.
Hate's
a strong word.
I'm not saying he hates Lamar Jackson, but he sounds like a hater. And right now, Lamar, you can't deny what Lamar Jackson did this year. You can't. And yes, I think he is stuck in his old traditional ways because he had Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, right? Mm. That's kind of maybe what how he likes his quarterbacks to look and feel in the pocket. But I don't understand how you deny Lamar Jackson of what he did this year. But it doesn't bother me because he still got 47 other votes and he still was an All-Pro. So
I certainly think Peyton Manning has a lot to do with his bias for pocket quarterbacks. I also think my memory's right. Bill Polian was a part of building the Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
Jim Kelly.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And
there you go.
So
pocket passer.
Pocket passer. Yep. And so what I think Bill Polian represents, and there's two other guys that work on a SiriusXM show that Russell appears on. And so does Bill Polian. Russell Wilson's a very likable guy. I think these two other voters friendly with Russell Wilson. But I just think that there's a group of football people that think what Lamar's doing is not sustainable. Yeah. And Bill Polian's bias is, but Peyton Manning, Jim Kelly, that's sustainable. But what he has to do is like, this All-Pro isn't about whether you can sustain it or
it's
not.
It's about this year.
What you just did this year.
Right.
And I'm going to just, I have a bias against short quarterbacks. I've been saying it for years. I grew up with Jeff George. I like a quarterback that's 6'4", 6'3". Those are the ideal heights. And again, I've said on record a lot of times, well, not the hugest Russell Wilson fan because he's short. But damn it. To me, Russell Wilson was the second best quarterback this year. Mm-hmm. And if I'd been, regardless of whether I like him or not because of his height, I'm going to give him the respect of he was the second best quarterback after Lamar. It bothers me that Bill Polian would be, but I'm not his age, and old people get really, really, really stubborn.
That's a good point. But it's an old guard mentality,
though. It's an old guard mentality. It's a level of stubbornness that, to some degree, makes me like question your intellect a little bit. I'm just saying the facts are so overwhelming in Lamar. He led the league in passing touchdowns and was sixth in rushing, and his team has the best record in football.
Right. Yeah. What else can you do? You know what's funny? Every one of us have our own set of biases. Like, it's just fact. That's things you like. You know, I like ketchup on my tacos, and you ain't gonna talk me out of it. And some people question my intellect when I sit down with my ketchup.
Guess
what? It's Taco Tuesday.
We're LeBron at. So you know what? I gotta get it in. But you know what's interesting? I think the most fascinating thing about all this, and Bill Polian keeps fueling this fire, is that a black quarterback found the white space at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. Now, the white space was, who's going to take full advantage of this position? Because mathematically, you're not taking advantage of it by not involving him in the run game and those principles. Mm-hmm. And not only did he do that to an A-plus level, he turned around and did the quarterback as a conventional pocket passer to an A-plus level. So then, as you were saying, how can Bill Polian now suggest that someone was greater in that role of combined attributes of being a runner and passer? Yeah. I don't care. Jim Kelly, no Super Bowl championships, but amazing Hall of Famer. Yep. And Peyton Manning got his two and was amazing, one of the best, my favorite player. But still, in the moment, you have to respect game, and Lamar has it all.
Yeah. You know, I think when you take somebody out of their comfort zone of something that has been tried and true for so long, you begin to scare the establishment, right? So it might not even be, again, a racially driven thing. This is I don't understand this. and I can't get my mind wrapped around it in my age, and I am not going to try it
to conform
because of the people that have done it that I think so highly of, and I think he's resistant to that change. He sees a change, and he don't want that change to take place.
Well, I think he and some others think this is a gimmick that Baltimore has gotten away with.
Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe it makes a guy like Polian obsolete.
Nah, I don't think it's... Because, again, I just think the guy, when you're in those positions, you just want to win, get into the Hall of Fame, blah, blah, blah. There's people that just don't believe. Like, you know what? He got away with it this year. But, again, this all-pro thing isn't about that. And what I think is dangerous for Bill Polian, again, because I got a lot of respect for Bill Polian. I'm from Indianapolis. Not a huge Colts fan, but I'm from Indianapolis. Very aware of his work, and he's certainly a Hall of Famer for what he did. But this is just a bad look in terms of you're presented a set of facts and you object to those facts in this type of way. It feeds people's notion of, oh, man, if you got a bias, you won't even react to the facts.
Yeah.
And that's, again, as someone who believes in following the facts wherever they lead, that's the proper mentality. That's what you want to have in any leadership position. And you know, someone like Bill Polian. This bothers me that he just won't follow the facts.
That's a microcosm statement for such a big, big discussion.
Just follow the facts. Jeez. And next year, I'm just wondering, what's he going to do next year? Is he going to follow the facts next year or follow his bias? Whitlock and Wiley joined once again by LeVar Arrington and James Harrison. Time for the most fearless discussion of the day.
Oh, man.
All right, let's go to Dallas. Sponsored by Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it is, the Whitlock. Right. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones launched a rap music career. He'd be Silk the Shocker.
Mm.
Y'all remember Silk? He's one of Master P's younger brothers, an original No Limit soldier.
Yes.
Silk's most famous song, "Oh, It Ain't My Fault." We can't stop, bitch. We can't stop. That's Jerry Jones. It's never his fault, and he can't stop.
Did I do that?
Explains Mike McCarthy landing the Cowboys coaching job. Jerry Jones reflected on one of the most disappointing seasons in Cowboys history and decided the failure had absolutely nothing to do with Jerry Jones. Oh, it ain't my fault. The truth is, it is Jerry's fault. Jerry's at the heart of the Cowboys' leadership problem. He wants to lead his football team from the owner's box. It can't be done. Not effectively. In replacing Jason Garrett, the Cowboys' number one priority should have been trying to find a head coach who is a dynamic leader in the mold of Tom Landry and Jimmy Johnson. Instead, Jerry hired a 56-year-old coach who is trying to rebrand himself as an analytics and X's and O's innovator. Good luck. You know what they say about old dogs and new tricks. The new McCarthy marketing campaign has been in operation for a month. Both NBC's Peter King and the NFL's network's Tom Pelissero have profiled McCarthy's football makeover. McCarthy wants to build a 14-man analytics team. He wants to hire two coaches who work on the future. He's going to use motion and shifts and multiple personnel groupings. McCarthy is the equivalent of a 60-year-old widow with a facelift, a tummy tuck, and a $2,000 Raquel Welch wig hitting a singles bar. He's a cougar.
Oh.
Cowboys needed a sugar daddy, an established brand with the leverage, personality, and wisdom to challenge Jerry's dominance of the team. Urban Meyer was the perfect coach for the Cowboys. 2 months ago on The Herd, Meyer posted his profile on SeekingCoachingArrangements.com. He favorited Jerry's profile.
Mm. That's the one. You know, that's the New York Yankees. That's the Dallas Cowboys. That's the one. Great city. You got Dak Prescott, you got Zeke Elliott, you got loaded team. To me, that's the one job in professional football you kind of say, I got to go do that.
Jerry blocked Meyer's profile and fell in love with McCarthy at first sight, according to reports. ESPN's Adam Schefter said the whole thing was wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and that McCarthy stayed the night at Jerry's house on the first night.
Dang.
I've never been a billionaire. I'd imagine that that much money foments delusion, works against self-reflection. It likely makes you look at every problem, every failure, and conclude, it ain't my fault. The Cowboys' lack of leadership is Jerry's fault. Jerry didn't address Dallas's leadership void with the hiring of McCarthy. Jerry accentuated the problem.
there's no limit to Jerry's delusion. The hiring of McCarthy signals Jerry takes no responsibility for Dallas's failure. All right, Marcellus.
Mm.
Does Mike McCarthy fix the Cowboys' leadership problem?
Amazing, Whitlock.
It was. I mean, it was.
I mean, you went silk to shock, though.
Oh, my God.
It was good.
February 8th, Microsoft, you want to come? Come on, man. No Limit Soldiers there. I'm there. Fee there, pee there, mama there, we there. This is a proven Super Bowl coach, and you're really not respecting him and what he's going to do for these Dallas Cowboys. They got it right. He's going to fix the leadership problem, and he's going to fix the exterior reputation of the Dallas Cowboys being dysfunctional upstairs. I'm going to tell you how. When you have a proven Super Bowl coach who's professional on the exterior, who knows how to deal with management, sometimes aggressive management, management that dictates terms, like he just left in Green Bay with Ted Thompson. If anyone knows how that dynamic worked, it worked like this. Here's your roster. Do what you want to do. Not a part of this process fully. So now he gets an owner who steps past that line, rightfully so in many ways, but still is going to dictate terms. He's used to dealing with that. Now you have the same guy who's professional on the exterior, running this locker room, leading these men because he's no punk. You ever met Mike McCarthy? One, you walk up to him, you don't feel like I should challenge him. And then after that conversation, you realize you were smart to not want to challenge him. I love this hire for so many reasons. Even Troy Aikman went out there and said it checks all the boxes. It's just a smart hire based on what he can do upstairs and still keep his calm. Remember all the issues in Green Bay? Every single week, every single presser, what did Mike McCarthy say? That's just what families do. That's just what teams do. We're fine. He's going to handle this on the outside and handle this on the inside.
You go ahead.
You want me to go?
Yes, sir.
I sure will. I sure will. And I couldn't disagree any more than what I could possibly disagree with him being able. He cannot fix the leadership problem that exists in Dallas. There is only one man, one soul that is up for the task of that job.
Jerry.
One man named Jerry Jones. Jerry has to take that same influence that has built the culture of undeniable leadership for him that has undermined many of coaches that have come before Mike McCarthy, and he has to set a tone very quickly and very early that this is the guy that is in charge. Now, from there, does he have the capabilities to be able to lead this team the right way? I say yes.
I would have to say no because of the things that I've been hearing. You're saying he's very professional and all this other stuff. I mean, a man that goes and get a massage on Saturday walkthrough don't seem like the type of professional coach that
Who told you that?
That's what I'm hearing.
On the way out, that's what a lot of people say bad things about
you. That's what I'm hearing. And then I also heard that he's not really that tough guy. They say he's a pretend tough guy. So with that being the case, I don't think he can fix that. And to you saying what you guys said about Jerry Jones is so loud and boisterous. Like, that is the voice of them. Like, the players, for me, your leadership comes from your veteran players. And Jerry is just so loud and boisterous that you don't really have a person that you could point to on that team and be like, this is the veteran leader of this team.
They thought it was Jason Witten.
No.
And they thought that Dak Prescott could transition into that position.
You're telling me it's either one of them?
No,
I'm not.
He's saying it's not.
And again, I think, James, your point is right. Then even let's say somebody stepped up and wanted to be that leader. You can't get over Jerry's voice. If Dak Prescott wants to be that leader, he can't compete with Jerry Jones. Jerry controls the purse strings, and Jerry's voice rings loudest. Everybody can say whatever they want after the game. Jerry's is going to get the headlines in the Dallas Morning News, on this show, Cowherd Show, Undisputed, it's always Jerry. His voice rings louder than everybody's, and that undermines everybody else, and that's what it blows my mind. If y'all listen to me talk the past couple weeks, I kept throwing out there, I think Jerry's learned a lesson. I think he's going to change. And I think he sat back and goes, it's not my fault.
There you go. As long as he silked the shocker in, cats.
You ain't doing stupid.
And it ain't his fault, but he got all the money that justifies it ain't your fault. Right. You can't change that.
You know what's interesting? This culture has flipped to a place where because of Jerry Jones, and he's not boisterous. Jerry Jones has a silent strength that he knows is going to resonate. So Jerry will walk.
No matter. Once I can, if I'm the owner, I can say whatever I want to say. It's not a coach or a player on that team that's going to go against what I say.
No.
Because now it's over with for
and,
you.
And part of Jerry's calculation is what I say doesn't matter because talk is cheap. Think about it. If you're internally motivated, it doesn't matter what's going on around you. If you're a product of your environment and your circumstances, then you're not going to go far as the numbers.
If the owner is saying it's one thing, and I believe in my heart and soul it's something else, and they ask me that question, am I going to go against what it is that he's saying?
No.
No, you're not. Unless but you also are savvy enough know how to avoid answers by still giving the answer that you need that keeps you going and out of that conversation. It's not hard. Let's not act like that every question that we've ever been given is something that we directly
okay,
had to
so
answer.
How are you going to go into that locker room and lead these men and tell them exactly what it is when you know that's going to get back up to him because he's up and down anyway?
Yeah, but that's not the calculation is not what I'm saying on the outside. That's why Mike McCarthy works. He had to deal with turmoil internally with Aaron Rodgers and some of the teammates. He had to deal with it upstairs with Ted Thompson, and he still won a Super Bowl and still went out there and won 15 games, 13 games, 12 games. My point is this. It's not perfect. But if you're externally motivated, Jerry Jones is a problem for you as a player. If you're internally motivated, you're going to do your job. Dak Prescott has ascended, has progressed, and matured despite Jerry Jones being
but there's
there.
53,
it depends on who you are.
There's 53 guys in that locker room.
Right.
I would bet 27 of them are externally motivated. And you're not going to change that. You're not going to get 53 guys who are immune to Jerry's bluster. It just isn't going to happen. Jerry needs to cut out the bluster. Look, Robert Kraft and the Patriots have laid the blueprint for 20 years on how to build a winning culture. You don't hear from Robert Kraft. You hear from Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. What they say about the Patriots gets the headlines week after week after week after week.
But Kraft's not the GM. So Kraft doesn't even have that role. Belichick's not even a GM technically. So if you look at the situation, it's not the same dynamic. There are a lot of sorry teams that don't say anything as well.
But if further
what we don't calculate are the teams that are doing it the right way in terms of perception of culture and still don't have the wins. You can't talk your way into wins or talk your way out of them.
That further proves the point. You can't be the GM. Make yourself appoint yourself the GM. Who appointed him the GM?
I mean,
he did.
It I'm worked out three GM Super Bowls position. And a Hall of Fame ownership.
He's trying to chase being
did
a
you see
Super
the players
Bowl
he had
champ.
On those Super Bowl teams?
And he's trying
what,
to chase
four,
that
four five Hall of Famers?
Yeah,
you can't do it with that. Six, did, seven,
and
eight,
and
nine,
had
10?
He to do with that being there, so give him some respect.
All I know.
Put some respect on
All I know is to
your
say.
Your young years don't matter?
No, they matter, but the credit has gone to Jim Johnson, and everybody knows that. Everybody's narrative is, can Jerry Jones do it without Jimmy Johnson?
He did already.
And his influence. No, he has
one
not.
Year.
He did not.
Can you do it without Jimmy?
He did
well,
not
year.
Because he did it with the players that Jim record. Johnson brought in. Anyways, here's what I'm saying, right? Urban Meyer would not be the solution because you can't be noisy enough. You can't beat noise with noise. Noise and noise creates more noise.
No. I hear but that.
It would not work.
I understand kids. That.
But you're when right. you hire Urban Meyer, you're saying I'm backing up. You're going to let his
but what if he's not?
What if he doesn't?
What if he's not?
Two horns honking.
And then now it's going.
Well,
it's
again, going. That's probably why Urban Meyer didn't get this job.
And that's why Mike McCarthy did.
And yes.
Bang.
Because he's going to let Jerry's horse.
Yes.
And you can't.
That's good.
No. There is no 70-year-old owner that can lead a football team.
Why? I don't know. Well, first of all, the sample size, how many other 70-year-old owners that are GMs that
There's
already
no
have three
owner that can lead a football team. Take age out of it.
Okay.
They can't lead a basketball team.
You brought it up. I don't see how this is a situation where it's a recipe for disaster. Mike McCarthy was the balancing act.
We keep seeing
it. We have not seen Mike McCarthy coach the Cowboys.
We're talking about. I know, but we've seen Dave Campo, Bill Parcells, Jason Garrett.
Okay.
Who am I forgetting? Chan Gailey.
Okay, listen, I'm not going to diss any of those guys because most of them don't qualify for this conversation. But Bill Parcells does. And Bill Parcells, what was the narrative of him?
Too
on
strong.
Him. No,
too strong.
And
too
can
much
you win
control.
One without Belichick? How did that go? It didn't go. So here's the thing. Mike McCarthy won one. Who did he win it with? Go. He did that. So y'all better start putting some respect on Mike McCarthy going to a situation.
Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball like a madman.
Great. And
he had
it's
to
a
develop.
Balancing act that Mike McCarthy is trying to play with upstairs noise and downstairs leadership. I think he's the perfect
guy.
He's
got to develop that rapport with the team. The way you start this thing off right and give McCarthy a fair opportunity to see if we can do this with his leadership is for Jerry Jones to go to everybody, and I mean everybody, that has to do with football ops and say that this is the wagon we're attaching our horses to. Do not come to me. Do not undermine his authority.
Not, that ain't happening.
If that doesn't happen, then we're going to be right here, hopefully.
That's why it does not fix the leadership problem.
Well, there you go.
He's won 63% of his games and a Super Bowl, and there's only 8 coaches active that have Super Bowl championships. And we going to diss him?
We're not dissing him.
Well, we going to have something
I'm
to say about
his
this situation?
I'm not good. I'm saying he's not fixing the leadership problem.
Oh, yes, he is.
Mike
can
probably fix the Cowboys' leadership problem. No.
Okay.
He's not that. Go look at this little marketing campaign. It ain't about leadership. It's about analytics teams and, we're going
to analytics only work if the players do it the way it's supposed to
respect
be.
Respect the man for working on his left hand. Analytics. He worked on his left hand. He knew the issues with him in coaching, and he worked on it. Respect.
Whitlock and Wiley, James Harrison, and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's move to New Orleans, where the Saints are looking for answers after another crushing playoff defeat, this time at the hands of Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. Drew Brees struggled for much of the game, and Jared Bell of USA Today writes that the legacy of Brees and Sean Payton's Saints is being redefined by their recent playoff failures, which Brees has played a major role in. In the last 3 playoffs, the future Hall of Famer has the most losses, interceptions, giveaways, and sacks taken. All right. Have the playoff failures altered your opinion of Drew Brees?
No, not at all. Because I already had a healthy, realistic view of looking at Drew Brees and his success and his career. If you want to say underachieving, I think that's a stretch. But certainly when you have one of the least statistically greatest players ever, and then the GOAT conversation for some, one Super Bowl championship makes you say we should have got more. Aaron Rodgers comes to that conversation as well. But I already was at that place. So when I see this team come up short in the playoffs year after year, especially of recent history, it just aligns to what I already thought. Like, there's Tom Brady tier one, and then there's tier two with a lot of other great, successful, talented quarterbacks. But to seem or to suggest that he's fallen off because of his issues in the playoffs and his team's lack of success, that's already written. That's how it's already been. One Super Bowl for the rest of y'all outside of Eli, Ben, and the rest are all for Brady.
Yeah, I'm saying no. It does not change my
alter.
It does not alter or change my opinion in any manner. A player builds his reputation.
You're kind of like Bill Polian. You're not going to adjust to new information.
No, I'm adjusting to the new information.
Alter, no change.
I definitely
change alter.
I just think that when you get into, I know that when you get into the whole insight in my focal, I can build what I want my reality to be. When it's out of sight, it's out of mind. This man has built his reputation play by play. Anybody that's ever played this game would never sit there and say Drew Brees' opinion is that of a failure, or he can't.
Nobody's
get it
going that way.
I don't even think it would be even in the question of having a strong stance that he can't win the big games.
No one's going that far.
Okay, well then it doesn't alter my opinion of him. So
what's your opinion of him first? Let's hear that.
Well, again,
let's say you went into this season thinking he was one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks.
I still think he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I still think he's one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks ever. There you go.
No, I'm with you. I don't. It's not altering my opinion of him. When you look at it, the game that they just lost, that's on him. Before that, they had a pass interference that didn't get called. And before that,
Is there anything he could do to alter your opinion of
it? If he comes back and does it another 2 more times, that could alter my opinion.
I feel like I'm listening to people like, you know.
It's not.
What type of people are you listening to, Jason Whitlock?
He got 547 touchdowns.
What you trying to say?
77,000 yards.
word.
I mean, I just react to new information. It's just like, okay, that you night go, in Brentwood altered my opinion of OJ.
Okay, well, we're talking about something totally different. He ain't killed nobody. He's not charged with a murder.
Did Michael Jordan alter your opinion?
Did Michael Jordan's last year alter your opinion of his whole career?
Not me.
You think he's not the greatest?
So say it.
Say it. Say it.
He didn't even make the playoffs.
Say it.
Did he? I don't remember.
Say it.
Look at you.
You can't put Drew
Bailout. Bailout.
Did it alter your opinion of MJ?
Yes or no? Yes or
Hell
no?
Hell no!
Okay!
The man was 38 and
47 years old!
MJ has 6 titles. MVP 5, 6
I don't
times.
Care. You're saying I got new information. That was new information.
That was new information.
MJ was 38. That was new information then. Okay. This should have altered your opinion.
I'm going to give you the analogy. I'm going to give you my opinion of Tom Brady is irreversible. It can't be changed.
Because?
He just had a bad performance. The man's got 6 titles. He's proven. He's elevated to GOAT
status.
So
if you got 6 titles, that's the only way you won't alter
so
your
Drew
opinion.
Doesn't have enough titles for you.
He don't have enough records?
My
point. My point is he doesn't have enough titles, so why would it alter you? Because they come up short
because
more than they
there
don't.
Were people. Again, I wasn't one of them. There were
so you were higher on him than he was, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I was high, and I've lowered him a notch or two. Mm. He's Dan Fouts with
so
the Super Bowl.
So is he top 10?
He's Dan Fouts.
No,
he's
Dan
never 10. he put a bunch of numbers and he won a Super Bowl.
What type of records does Dan Fouts have?
You know how many people used to have them all when he retired?
Used to.
Yeah.
Is he better than Dan Marino?
Who got him now?
No, he's not better than Dan Marino.
Even with the title and the records?
No, he's never been MVP in this league. Okay. That's what I've been trying to tell y'all. He's never been the best quarterback. I hate to sound like I'm taking the guy's great. He's tremendous. Again, he's the Walter Payton of his era. I get it. But he is not what people are putting him out to be as like better than Marino and some, Steve Young and
what does Walter Payton represent?
No. Again, Walter Payton represents a lot in terms of class and all that. Walter Payton's one of the greatest players of all time.
Okay.
But again, when it comes to class and the way he represented the league, Walter Payton and Drew Brees are synonymous to me. But as a performance and as a player, Drew Brees is going down a notch because of these playoff failures. I think that's only fair. It's new information.
You had him too high to begin with. Mm.
Jordan had new information.
Jordan had new information on Jordan.
What, he's exempt?
Right.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Mike McCarthy. Big dummy of the day.
Big dummy of the day go to the person that said that based off of the latest information, Drew Brees. Wait a minute. Based off the latest information of your last 6 months of dating, is that what we should judge you by?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Let's talk Mike McCarthy.
That's new information.
Who will be introduced as the Cowboys head coach tomorrow. McCarthy's claim to fame is coaching Aaron Rodgers. We all know Dak Prescott can use some help from the coaching staff. Marcellus, any chance McCarthy turns Dak into Aaron Rodgers?
Woo! Aaron Rodgers? Not that, but look, what is Dak Prescott's numbers? Dak Prescott's evolution? I don't want to limit the guy because he continues to get better, so I will say he's going to be one of the best, but no, not into Aaron Rodgers. That's another level, another stratosphere, not Aaron Rodgers.
No. And I don't think Probably. Dak got better this year. Stats did, but he didn't. All right, Uncle Jimmy.
Interesting.
You got some no limit thoughts here. You didn't like my Silk the Shocker analogy for Jerry Jones. What?
Well, once again, nephew, you done got this one here chopped and screwed all messed up too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How the hell you gonna compare Jerry Jones to Silk the Shocker? Who the hell Silk the Shocker? Marcus, who the hell is Silk the Shocker?
I actually love Silk the Shocker, bro.
I know who Jerry Jones is.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Silk the Shocker?
I love him too.
Some little one-hit wonder.
No.
He wasn't even the face of the No Limit. Mm. Jerry Jones is the general manager, owner, and proprietor of the Dallas Football Cowboys. If you're gonna compare him to anybody from No Limit, how the hell is not gonna be Master P? Say nah. Look, man, Master P ran everything down in the dirty, dirty South. Jerry running everything down in Dallas, including his mouth. Look at me, you got Master P, and Jerry Jones is an OG. So if you put it together, don't that make him a master OG? Yeah. Oh, but once again, nephew, you got to show your lack of hip-hop culturicity. I can't even compare Jerry Jones to Master P.
Yeah.
Because Master P had talent. I don't know what the hell Jerry Jones' talent is. If you're going to compare him to somebody talent for talent, wouldn't it be more like DJ Khaled?
Oh, man, y'all. Khaled make heat.
What the hell DJ Khaled do?
A lot of songs.
Hey, man, all DJ Khaled do is go out and sign talent and put his name on it. That don't sound like Jerry Jones, I'll kiss a wolf's ass. Okay?
Another one.
Look at man, DJ Khaled, they're talking about, we the best. Jerry Jones talking about, how about them Cowboys? Ain't we the best? Look, man, and this phenomenon didn't just start. You know who started this?
Who?
Your boy, P. Diddy. Well, what P. Diddy say? Wanna be a baller, shot caller. Jerry Jones just take over. Maybe you wanna be a Dallas footballer, but I'll be damned if I give Dak another dollar. Come on, Jerry. Look here, man, let me tell you something. Just like Jerry, look, if you tell P. Diddy he can't dance, hey, P. Diddy will bust your head. Just like if you tell Jerry Jones he ain't a football coach. Hey, you remember what happened to Jimmy Johnson when he told Jerry Jones, you ain't no football coach?
What?
Same thing that happened to Biggie when he told Puff Daddy he wasn't a rapper. I'm telling you, you better put some speck on his name. He's an OG.
I got to get to my Mike McCarthy.
Hey, hey,
I thought, you know what I thought he was going to talk about? Remember when P. Diddy beat up the football coach at UCLA?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I thought you was going.
No, I'm just trying. I didn't want to think that was a legend. Yeah.
Them dumbbells coming out.
I got Mike McCarthy at a 57 role player. Marcellus, how you got Mike McCarthy at a 25 in job performance?
He got the best job in sports.
He was fired from his last job.
Today, new information. Man, what's going on with you?
That new information again.
Got the best job in sports.
The internet agrees with you. They got him at an all-star
as well. Urban Meyer is at the best job in sports.